Welcome to episode 10 of the Fredcast. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In today's episode of the Fredcast, there's lots of news to cover, including the annual Paris-Nice stage race, where American Floyd Landis is continuing his winning ways. Japan cyclists eye a Tour de France bid in the coming years. Lance Armstrong is on trial in Italy. Top 10 bike rides in the United States, learning to build your own bike frame, and a bicycle scare shuts down a large portion of a major American university. Following the news, I have a review of a new energy drink called Glucose. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes your Fredcast. Welcome back to the Fredcast, and let's get right down to the news. Well, the European racing season's finally started, and it starts every year with the annual Paris-Nice stage race. Now, all of the Pro Tour teams assembled last weekend and began the race with a prologue time trial, and the time trial was won by defending champion Bobby Julich. Now, he took the stage with a one-second advantage over his second-place finisher Andrei Kazeshkin of Kazakhstan, and a two-second advantage over third-place Bradley McGee of Australia. Following the prologue, the riders hit the road in a succession of 190 or 200-kilometer stages. The first stage was won by Belgian Tom Bonin of Quickstep, with a sprint finish over Australian Alan Davis and Spain's Francisco Ventoso at the finish line. World champion Bonin went on to win the 200-kilometer stage two. Now, in the 170-kilometer stage three, American Floyd Landis finally struck yellow to take the overall lead in the week-long stage race. With 20 kilometers to go before the finish line in this stage, Landis broke away from the peloton on a difficult climb and was able to build a solid lead over the rest of the riders. By the end of stage three, previous winner and race leader Tom Bonin was more than 4 seconds back. But as things go in stage racing, Bonin wasn't done yet. In stage four, which was 193 kilometers, Bonin ended up taking advantage of the flatter terrain so that he was able to come back and win the stage, with Australian Alan Davis coming in second for the third time in the race. Always a bridesmaid. Landis retained his overall leader's jersey following stage four, even though he didn't win the stage, with a 9-second lead over his next rival. Now this morning, we saw stage five, and this one was won by Spain's Joaquin Rodriguez. It was a 201-kilometer stage and was once again won by a rider who was best able to conquer the day's hardest climb, just like Floyd had done earlier in the week. Nevertheless, Floyd retained his 9-second lead in the overall classification. Now, there are two more stages to go in the race, and I'll make sure to bring you the final update next week on the Fredcast. But meanwhile, keep in mind that you're going to be able to watch the highlights of Paris-Nice this Sunday night, March 12th, at 5 o'clock Eastern Time on the OLN cable network. So I've put links in the show notes to both the OLN website, so you can check out the schedule, as well as to the Paris-Nice website, so that you can follow the rest of the weekend's riding online, and those links are in the show notes. Quick update on the Walmart bicycle trial. For the last couple of weeks, I've told you about the fact that there are some families of some children that were injured when they were riding the bikes that they had purchased at Walmart, and they had had some issues with the quick releases. The kids fell and got injured, and those families sued Walmart, as well as the manufacturer, the importer, and an insurance company. Well, if you don't remember, Walmart ended up prevailing in that case. The families didn't win. But now the families are going back to court, and they're accusing the judge in the case of bias, and therefore they're requesting a new trial. If you'll recall, they were seeking several million dollars in damages. According to some stories I've read, though, one plaintiff settled with the defendants during the jury's deliberations. So looks like Walmart may be headed back to court, although it depends on whether or not the plaintiffs are able to prove their case that the judge was biased. As always, I'll keep you updated right here on the Fredcast. This story is kind of neat. As you know, the UCI and the Pro Tour decide on which teams are able to participate in the Grand Tours, and most specifically, the Tour de France. At least that's the way it's been in the past until the Grand Tours have had their row with the UCI in the last couple of months. But meanwhile, there's a story that's coming out of Japan about a group of Japanese cyclists, high-end cyclists, racers, who have set their sights on going to the Tour de France in the year 2010. And this is really neat. Basically, what's going on is there's a team that's set up of some very, very strong cyclists who really want to go to the Tour de France, and their team's ultimate objective is to become a UCI pro team and then take part in the Tour de France in 2010. Now, before that, they're hoping to be able to get promoted as what's called a UCI Continental Pro Team by next year, 2007, and to be able to compete in the Vuelta in Spain in 2008, and then in the Giro in Italy in 2009, with the ultimate objective, as I've said, of going to the Tour in 2010. Team leader said, quote, "The most important mission of this team is to take part in the Tour de France. This is a team set up 100% for the Tour de France. I'm really looking forward to how far we can go with these riders." Now, most of these riders come from Team Bridgestone Anchor, which has been around for a little while. And what's typically happened in Japan is that teams have had one main sponsor. But this team, what they're doing is they're doing what a lot of the other teams are doing. They're trying to find multiple sponsors so that they can make sure that they can attract the best riders, make sure that they have all the support that they need to be able to go to some of these larger races in Europe and to be able to field a very strong, very competitive team. So wish them a lot of luck. Hope that they make it. I think it's really great to see more and more countries being interested in participating in some of these grand tours. Okay, for those of you out there who are racing and taking part in USA Cycling recognized events, this is a story definitely for you. USA Cycling has decided that they're going to add another helmet standard to the approved helmets that you can wear when you go out there and do your racing. Now, in 1986, USA Cycling became the first International Cycling Federation to make hard shell helmets required for all bicycle races. Now, at that time, they acknowledged the Snell standard, the ANSI standard, and the United States CPSC, or Consumer Product Safety Commission standard. Now, in the last few years, the UCI has also made hard shell helmets mandatory for all races, and they've also come out with a new standard in Europe, and that's the ECS or CEN standard, and it's part of the European community. So now, if you're going to participate in a USA Cycling sanctioned race, these are the standards, at least one of which, your helmet must adhere to: the ANSI Z90.4 standard, the Snell Memorial Foundation's B or N series standard, the ASTM or American Society for Testing and Materials F-1447 standard, the CSA or Canadian Standards Association CSA D113.2-M standard, the U.S. CPSC or Consumer Product Safety Commission standard for bicycle helmets, and finally, the European Committee for Standardization or CEN standard for bicycle helmets. Now, if you are going to go to a race, you have to be able to show proof, written proof, if asked, that your helmet meets these standards, and you would do that by showing the label that is on your helmet. So if you've got a helmet and it's a rather old one, or perhaps, I don't know, you've been a lot out in the rain a lot, or you've done a lot of sweating, and that label has worn off, make sure that if you're participating in a USA Cycling event, that you do have a good label on there, just in case they should ask you for proof that you meet one of these standards. That's right, it's time once again for the Lance Armstrong Story of the Week. And this is a Lance Armstrong story that we've heard before, but it's just an update on it. The defamation case against Lance Armstrong opened this week in Italy, where the seven-time winner of the Tour de France is being accused of defamation against Italian cyclist Filippo Simeoni. Now, in case you don't remember, this case centers around comments that Lance made to the French newspaper Le Monde back in April 2003, when Lance said that Simeoni had only agreed to testify against sports physician Michel Ferrari in exchange for a lesser penalty should Simeone ever get accused of doping by the UCI. Now, Ferrari was once an advisor to Lance, and Ferrari received a suspended jail sentence in 2004 for sports fraud and malpractice. Lance cut his ties with Ferrari when Ferrari was accused of these charges. Now, Armstrong's lawyer is Enrico Nahn, and he's arguing that the charges should be dropped. Try to follow this, because as he says, and it makes sense, a foreigner, in this case an American, shouldn't be held liable in Italy for comments made to a French newspaper. And the lawyer said, quote, even if the internet can be read anywhere. Now, neither Lance nor Simeone were in the courtroom. It's in a place called Latina, which is near Rome. Now, there was a previous case that Simeone brought against Armstrong. And in that case, Simeone accused Lance of threatening him after Lance chased Simeone down during an early stage in the 2004 Tour de France. And according to Simeone, Lance threatened him during that race because he was testifying about doping in Ferrari's trial. So there's just a whole mixed web going on here between, it's sort of a triad between Lance and Ferrari and Simeone. And there's just a lot of bad blood here. And whether it's sour grapes on Simeone's part, whether Lance should be held accountable for his comments, we're really going to find out. Now, there was a previous case, another previous case, which I told you about a couple of weeks ago on the Fredcast, where there was a criminal court in Paris that refused to hear a defamation case that Simeone brought against Armstrong in France. And in that case, it was thrown out because of a statute of limitations issue. So there's just cases going back and forth. I mean, if you count them up, that's three cases that Simeone has brought against Armstrong. So there's just definitely a lot of bad blood between these two. And we'll see what happens. The judge in the case, her name is Maria Teresa Cialoni. And on April 13th, she's going to end up deciding whether or not this case goes forward. So that's next week. And I will let you know next week on the Fredcast what happens. Meanwhile, on the other side of the world, the Taipei International Cycle Show began this week. It began on March 8th and it goes through March the 11th. And the Taipei Cycle Show is where a lot of the Asian manufacturers traditionally showed off their latest and greatest products. And I've been to this show, I don't know, half a dozen or more times when I was doing a lot of business in Japan, Taiwan, and China when I was in the bicycle industry. And in those days, the Taipei Cycle Show was where we saw very high-end companies bringing a lot of the products that we had already seen the previous fall at the Interbike trade show. In those days, it was in Anaheim and later moved to Las Vegas. And then they would be in booths right next to some brands that you've never heard of with some names that are very difficult to pronounce, but who are also some of the largest factories for components and bicycles in the world who are making a lot of private label products for names that you would know when you go into your local bike shop. These days, however, the Taipei Cycle Show has really sort of undergone a transformation. In the old days, it was really just the Asian manufacturers. But these days, there are manufacturers from all over the world. This show had 502 Taiwanese exhibitors and 148 from abroad. And this time, there were high-end products from companies all over the place. And there were even a lot of American companies and American brands that were showing brand new products that they hadn't shown before at this year's Taipei Cycle Show. So it sounds like things were really exciting at this year's show, and it sounds like Taipei is becoming among some of the more respected high-end shows in the world, along with Milan and Interbike and some of the other shows in Europe. What's always interesting, though, is that at the start of the Taipei Cycle Show, the manufacturers in Taiwan are given awards if they have what the Taiwanese Bike Manufacturers Association is calling innovative products. So this year, I just wanted to give you an idea, just a taste of what some of those awards were, because some of these products we're never going to see in the U.S. They're kind of funky, but it's always kind of interesting. The one that won the Best Practicality Award was something called the Trio Bike. And this was from Ideal Bicycle Corp. And Ideal, by the way, is one of the world's largest bicycle manufacturers. And this is a really interesting bike. It is a standard bike. And without tools, You can transform it into one that also has an attached two-wheeled front cart. So it's kind of like a push cart, and that won their Best Practicality Award. SR Suntour, you may remember them. They are, or at least they have been in the past, a definite competitor for Shimano, and they won the Best Innovation Award with a new derailleur, which is an enclosed system. It's called a gearbox, and it takes the place of the bottom bracket on your bike. So that's kind of interesting. Also, there was one that won an award. It's a seat post with a built-in tire pump. And that one also I thought was kind of interesting. And then there was a pedal from a company called VP. And if you look at some of the pedals out there on a lot of the mass market bikes and the pedals that come with bikes in your regular independent bicycle dealer store, VP makes a lot of those pedals. I've been to their factory. It's kind of interesting. And they've got a new pedal called Flexiped. And this one is supposed to be able to increase your muscles in your ankles, hips, back, and legs. So a lot of interesting stuff going on at the Taipei Cycle Show. There always is. I actually thought about going this year, but just decided too late. So hopefully next year I'll be able to go and maybe bring you a little bit of audio from the show floor, as well as bring you some cool photos of some of these really neat products that they put out in Taiwan. Okay, another story that actually has something to do with Asia, and that is that you know, the Olympics are going to be coming up in Beijing, China soon. And one of the ways that cyclists find their positioning at the Olympics every year, or every 4 years, excuse me, is by earning UCI points. And so USA Cycling has announced that six of the seven 2006 National Mountain Bike Series events have now been included on the UCI calendar. And USA Cycling is going to provide prize money so that these are now UCI-sanctioned events. And I've listed in the show notes which of the events will include UCI points. And the great thing about this is that points earned between January 1st, 2006 and December 31st, 2007 are going to count toward a nation's ranking and then factor into the number of start positions a country receives at the 2008 Beijing Olympic Games. As a requirement to get the UCI sanctioning, USA Cycling has contributed more than $33,000 in prize money and fees toward the national series. And this is really great. According to USA Cycling, quote, the presence of UCI points for cross-country athletes at seven events in the United States this year provides American athletes the much-desired opportunity to accumulate valuable points, and this is the important part, on their home turf. So that's really great. This means that American athletes are going to be able to go to these events, win UCI points, and help the United States in its ranking for the Olympic Games in Beijing. Now, I've listed the calendar for the 2006 National Mountain Bike Series schedule in the show notes, and I have also listed what category of points will be available at each of the events. So this is really great. If you're going to go out there and you're going to be able to race at that level in the National Mountain Bike Series schedule, you're going to be able to earn points that are going to help the United States in Beijing. Okay, and if you travel a lot like I do, and I do a lot of business travel, as you've probably learned over the last couple of Fredcasts, you're constantly looking for new places to ride, whether you bring your bike with you when you go on trips or whether you rent a bike when you go on a trip. You're always looking for a great place to ride, and sometimes it's kind of difficult. Maybe, you know, for me, when I'm out working, I'm not done in time to be able to go to a bike shop before they close and get their ideas about great places to ride. And so I'm always looking for new places. And Coastal Living Magazine has recently published what they call their top 10 bike trips that show off coastal scenery. And the rides aren't really that long. I think the longest one I saw on there, well, I mean, was about 33 and a half miles, although then they talk about riding the US-1 down the Florida Keys. So I think that's a little bit longer. But for the most part, they're relatively short rides. But if you're out on vacation and you don't have a lot of time, or if you're on a business trip and you don't have a lot of time, this article is probably worth referencing. And I've put a link in the show notes, but I'll just tell you that the locations that they mentioned is the top 10 coastal best bike rides. Starting David Letterman style, number 10, the Outer Banks of North Carolina. Number 9, Huntington Beach, right here in California. Number 8, Bandon, Oregon. Number 7, the aforementioned Florida Keys, and that's 106 miles, folks, so keep that in mind. Number 6, Maui, Hawaii, and right here I got to stop and just sort of give you my comment here. What they're talking about in Maui is the downhill ride down the Haleakala Crater. It's downhill all the way, and for the most part, you're renting beach cruiser kind of bikes, and you're wearing motorcycle helmets and ponchos because it rains a lot. I haven't done it. I've seen people doing it. And at least from a Fred's perspective, it didn't look like a whole lot of fun. I have taken my bike to Hawaii, both to the Big Island, where I actually rented a bike, and had some fantastic road rides, a lot of them along the same course that they use for the Ironman. So that was great. And I've also taken my own bike to Maui a couple of times and just ridden around the island and had some just spectacular rides. So I can't agree with them more about going to Hawaii and riding your bike, but not so sure about the Haleakala Crater part. Okay, continuing the list. Number 5, Corpus Christi, Texas. Number 3, Presque Isle State Park in Pennsylvania. Number 2, Jekyll Island, Georgia. And the number 1 top 10 coastal bike trip as rated by Coastal Living Magazine, Lopez Island, Washington. So go ahead and check out the show notes. There's a link right there. You can read the article for yourself. And if you're in any of these locations, get out there and ride. Okay, now here's something that if you're really Freddy and really geeky, this will definitely interest you. And this is something that I would love to do. Brew Racing in North Carolina is offering their second annual frame building class. You get to go to Brew and you actually learn how to build your own bike frame, either a mountain bike frame or a BMX frame, and you actually do it. You build it yourself. So I think that would be a lot of fun. And you actually go, you build your frame, and then you end up powder coating your own frame. And you do everything. It even includes a TIG welding class. So I think that would be a really fantastic thing. If anybody out there goes out and does it, let me know. I'd love to know about it. Enrollment is limited. They only take 6 students. It costs about $1,600 to build a 20 or 24 inch BMX frame and $1,800 for a mountain bike frame. Now those costs include 4 nights at a motel. And the class runs from March 27th through the 31st. So if you want to go, you got to sign up now. I've put a link in the show notes. And if you want to call Brew, their telephone number in the United States is area code 336-246-8555. That sounds like a lot of fun. And for a class of a different type, the Sugoi Dirt Series is back this year with a full schedule of 15 camps across Western Canada and the United States. And this is the 6th season of the Sugoi Dirt Series. And this is not, when I call it a series, this is not a race series. This is an instructional series, and almost like a mountain bike camp. Joining this year's instructional team are the former Norba champion Lisa Scher and the Team Maxxis downhill star April Lawyer. Now, each of the 13, there's 13 women's camps and then 2 co-ed camps, and they're going to offer a wide variety of skills from basic front wheel lifts and switchbacks to drops, log rides, and bunny hops. And this is going to, I think this would be really, really neat. And according to Sugoi's vice president of sales, quote, "We honestly consider the Dirt Series to be one of the best investments we make as a brand. The impact it has on consumers, retailers, and bike communities is a real asset." Now, in addition to Sugoi, 2006 sponsors include Fox Racing Shocks, Luna Bar, Race Face, Pete's Tofu, and Maxxis Tires. I've put a link in the show notes to the Dirt Series website. And also in the show notes, I've listed the entire schedule, beginning April 15th through the 16th in San Rafael, California, and going all the way down to September 8th through 10th in Whistler in BC. And by the way, parenthetically, I have mountain biked in Whistler. And if you're looking for a great vacation this summer, I have to tell you, mountain biking in Whistler is top notch. You find some great downhill, some great single track, and it's just a beautiful place to go. So, I don't know, schedule yourself for September 8th through 10th in Whistler. I think you'll enjoy yourself, and you will definitely enjoy the Sugoi Dirt Series and the instruction that you'll get, and your mountain biking skills will improve. And finally, here's a story from Ohio University in Athens, Ohio. Late last week, very early in the morning, an Ohio University police officer came upon a bike in a busy area of campus. He noticed that on the bike was a sticker. On the sticker, it said, "This bike is a pipe bomb." He immediately reported it to dispatch, and within minutes, buildings were shut down all over campus. The bomb squad came out, and after investigating a little bit, they used a high-powered water spray on the bike and then pried it apart with a hydraulic device. In all, it took them 3 hours to determine that the bike wasn't ever going to explode. And it wasn't until later that police learned that the sticker that was put on the bike referred to a punk rock band from Pensacola, Florida, called, you guessed it, "This Bike is a Pipe Bomb." Now, the bike belonged to a graduate student named Patrick K. Hanlon. Not only did he lose his bike, but he was also originally charged with a misdemeanor of inducing panic. Now, in the middle of the ordeal, Hanlon identified himself to the campus police and told them what the sticker meant. But despite his cooperation, he was charged anyway. Thankfully, cooler heads prevailed, and a few days later, the university decided that due to a lack of malice on Hanlon's part, they would drop the charges. Of course, there was no word on whether or not they were going to replace his bike. Now, at a news conference, shortly after the whole event was over, the dean of students, a gentleman by the name of Terry Hogan, said that the sticker was benign. Yeah, we knew that. But the concern was that it was on a bike. So somebody asked him, does that mean that if it had been stuck to a telephone pole or something other than a bike, it probably wouldn't have happened? And Hogan says, yeah, I think that's probably right. Well, it turns out, I did a little bit of research, and the band This Bike is a Pipe Bomb has caused problems like this before. In 2001, in Austin, Texas, police detained a woman who had the same sticker on her bike at a peace rally, and she was released after officers verified that the band actually does exist. Now, I haven't listened to any of their music, so I can't vouch for whether or not I want to put one of these stickers on my bike, but I have to tell you, I probably wouldn't recommend it. And that's going to do it for the news for today. Well, a few weeks ago, I got an email from a listener named Noreen, and she runs a small cycling team in the Portland, Oregon area called Team Rubicon, and I put a link in the show notes so you can check it out. They have a pretty neat team and a pretty neat website. And she told me that they had been working with a new performance beverage sort of as their lab rats, or test monkeys, as she put it. And the new performance drink was called Glucose. That's G-L-E-U-K-O-S. And again, I've got a link to their website in the show notes. And she told me that glucose had been around in the running world for quite some time, but that it was fairly new to the cycling world. And she told me that one of the things that they really liked about it was that when you drink it and you use it for your training, you don't tend to bonk like you do with a lot of other performance drinks, and that it was really easy on your stomach, that it had no added food coloring or sugars, and she wanted to know whether or not I'd be interested in giving it a try and perhaps reviewing it on the Fredcast. So being the Fred that I am and wanting to try new things and new things that are on the market, I told her, sure, go ahead and send me some. And so she sent me a bunch of packages of it, and I really encourage you to go to the website to take a look at the way that they package the premixed drink, because it is really unusual, and that's probably one of the first things I'm going to tell you about after first I tell you a little bit about what glucose is. Now, glucose is a performance drink that has no added sugars, as Noreen said. No sucrose, no fructose. It just has glucose. Now, glucose, in case you don't know, is the same stuff that if you were to get an IV and they needed to give you fluids and get you rehydrated really quickly, that's what would be in the IV, is glucose. And glucose really is also called, as the packaging said, blood sugar. It's the same stuff that your body uses to fuel itself. It is the most simple carbohydrate that your body uses. So unlike a lot of the sugars that you find in a lot of other drinks out there on the market, a lot of those drinks have fructose and sucrose, and those take time. And they also take your body's energy to break down and get them absorbed into your bloodstream. Different than that, glucose, as soon as you ingest it, goes right into your bloodstream, and it goes right to where your body needs it the most to make sure that you've got power, endurance, concentration, all the things that these very simple carbohydrates provide to your body. Now, in addition to glucose, The drink itself also has potassium and sodium to replenish the electrolytes that you're losing in sweat. You know, that salt that accumulates on your face when you go out for a long ride. So when I received my package of glucose, that's G-L-E-U-K-O-S, as opposed to what it contains, I opened it up and I was really shocked to see the package. And go to the website and check it out. It comes in, I mean, the only way that I could describe this is as a bottle bag, if you will. It sort of reminds me of the flexible flasks that you might take skiing or out for a hike in the wintertime. And it's a great package. One of the things I really like about it is if you stop by at a convenience store and picked up a bottle of water or picked up a bottle of Gatorade or Powerade or whatever your drink of choice is, you'd have this hard bottle that would be in your jersey pocket. And that's not really comfortable. But the great thing about this bag is that it's really flexible. And so you could put it in your jersey pocket and it would sort of form fit around your body and it would be a lot more comfortable. The other great thing about it is it has this really neat twist off top, that is resealable because it's threaded, just like anything that's threaded. And, when you open it up and you pour the drink out, this bag collapses to a really, really tiny size. Again, it would fit perfectly in your jersey pocket or in your saddlebag and take up almost no room. So the first thing that I noticed once I opened it up and started pouring it into my water bottle to get ready for a ride was that it was colorless. It was completely clear. I looked at the package, and the package is black and sort of a burgundy color, and it says that it's punch flavor, and so I immediately expected a red or a pink drink to come out, and instead what came out was this clear beverage, and I was really surprised by that, and also kind of pleased. I like the fact that there weren't any additional colorings in the drink. So I put a couple of ice cubes into my water bottle. I poured the drink in. I closed it up and I went out for my ride. And I almost forgot about the fact that I was using a new drink. So a couple miles down the road, I reached down for my water bottle and I'm keeping my eyes on the road. I'm not looking at the bottle, which would have been my tip off that I was drinking something new. And I took a sip and I was really pleasantly surprised. It has a really, really great flavor. You know how you drink a lot of energy drinks? And maybe it says it's punch flavor, it says it's orange flavor. And when you go to drink it, it's not exactly like a regular orange drink, or it's not exactly like a fruit punch. This tastes like a regular fruit punch, one that you would go out and buy, say a Hawaiian punch or a high C or somebody like that. It really tastes really, really tasty. And it was something that I would drink on the bike or off the bike. I really enjoyed the taste. Now, it's a little bit difficult to really evaluate, at least for me, whether or not it was better or worse than my normal energy drink of choice. I normally drink Cytomax when I'm out on my rides, because very early in my cycling, I found that by just drinking water, I was bonking. I was getting a lot of cramping. My muscles were hurting. And as soon as I switched to Cytomax, a lot of those problems went away. Of course, training helps that as well. So what I can tell you is that I didn't bonk. I didn't have muscle cramps. I didn't have muscle aches. And I felt really good. But it's sort of subjective as to whether or not I felt better or worse with glucose or Cytomax. I think that they were fairly similar. But I do like the fact that with the glucose, I know that my body isn't working hard to break down the sugars into something that it can use right away. And that is a definite plus over Cytomax or any of the other drinks that I've used. So I really, really liked that. Now, originally, I was sort of disappointed in the fact that it came, other than the fact that I liked the package, I was a little bit disappointed that it came in a package because I buy my energy drink in bulk. I buy it in a mix and then I just mix it up before I go for every ride. Well, the nice thing is that glucose also comes in a mix and, so that you can either buy it in its packaged form or in a mix that you can mix it yourself. And obviously that's going to be a little bit more cost efficient for you. Now, A great thing about this is that it is starting to be found in just your regular convenience stores. This is a product that 7-Elevens are starting to carry. And I have to tell you that when I'm out on a long ride and I run out of the Cytomax, which I normally drink, you know, and I stop in at that 7-Eleven, I'm typically buying a Gatorade product, which is really overly sweet and really overly, I don't like the taste a whole lot of a lot of the Gatorade products. And so I just sort of feel stuck. Now I would definitely pick up this glucose from the 7-Eleven instead, because I know it's going to be better for me. I know it's going to give me the energy and the fuel that I need, as well as the electrolytes that I need. And I know that I'm going to enjoy the taste. So this is definitely something that when I go into 7-Eleven, I'm going to look for first. Now, you can buy these online. You can go to www.glucose.com. Again, I have to keep spelling it because it's a little unusual. GLEUKOS.com. You can buy 12 of the prepackaged ready-to-drink glucoses in either lemon or punch flavor, 12 of them for $20.95. Or you can buy the mix. And the mix, for $12.95, you get a bag that makes 1 gallon. Or you can get 6 bags, or in other words, 6 gallons, for $69.99. So, sort of my conclusion here, I would definitely recommend glucose. I think that its concept makes nothing but sense. It would be nice to see a lot of the other energy drink manufacturers follow their lead and take the sucrose and the fructose out and give us this very simple carbohydrate in their drinks. Take the artificial colorings out. I'd like to see that as well. So I love the packaging. I love the taste. And I love the fact that this is something that I'm going to be able to get just when I'm out on the road, on a ride, and I'm not going to be have to buying the Powerades and the Gatorades, which I really don't like that much anyway, but I know are going to give me some of the electrolytes that I need back. So go ahead and check out glucose again. Just for full disclosure, they gave me some to try. I have no connection to the company. And I'm always going to be honest with you. This is a product that I like, and it's a product that I would encourage you to at least give a try. Okay, and just a couple of quick hits to go in the show, and then we're going to be done for the day. I found a new website that I wanted to tell you about, and this is a very, very Freddy website, and this is why I wanted to bring it to you. This website is called Weight Weenies, and I've put a link in the show notes. It's weightweenies.starbike.com, and here's why this is really great. You know, when you go out on your ride and maybe your buddy has a new bike and you're all looking at it and you're talking to him about it, and what's one of the very first things you do? You lift it up. You want to see if it's lighter than your bike. Well, there's a lot of us out there that are weight weenies, and we want to try to get our bikes to be as lightweight as possible. And one of the ways you do that is by changing components here and there and bolts and little bits on your bike to try to get that weight down as low as possible. Well, you know, you could spend hours, days, weeks going from manufacturers' websites, from one to the other, and checking out catalogs and brochures to try to find out just the right mix of weights of items on your bike. Now you don't need to. Weight Weenies is a really great website, because if you go there and maybe you want to replace your pedals, for instance, and you want to try to find pedals that are going to be lightweight but that are going to be clipless and are going to fit exactly your needs, you go there and it lists, at least it seemed like, every pedal you could find and what its weight was. And so it's a really great site for you to go and evaluate the weight of different components that you might put on your bike. So go ahead and go to the show notes, click on the link, check it out. Let me know what you thought of it. Okay, next, there's 2 rides this weekend, and I'm interested to know if any of you Fredcast listeners are going to be doing either of them. The first is the Solvang Century. I've talked about this before on the Fredcast, and this is one of my annual events, and it is one of my my century of the months for this year, and I'm heading out and up there in just a few minutes as soon as I finish the Fredcast. Unfortunately, it's going to be raining and very cold this weekend, at least for Californians. I was just reading in the newspaper that we're talking about snow level down to 1,000 feet or less. So I'm definitely hoping that that's not going to happen, because I don't think I have the right clothes for the snow. But anyway, if any of you Fredcast listeners are going, look for me. I am riding, wow, I think this is the first time I've said this on the Fredcast. I'm riding a red Colnago C40, and I'll be the one with the Garmin Edge on my handlebars, and I wear a red, white, and blue Giro Atmos helmet. So if you can see through the rain and the wind and the snow, and you see me out there this weekend, definitely say hi. Let's ride together. That would be a ton of fun. Also this weekend in South Africa, and I've talked about this once before on the show, and again, this is one of those rides I got to do before I die, is the Cape Argus Pick and Pay Bike Tour. This is going to take place this Sunday with, and this blows me away, 36,000 cyclists taking part. And what's really neat about it is that it's not just, as you can imagine, South Africans that take part in this, but apparently they get a lot of entrants from all over the world. According to a news story I read yesterday, half of the entrants come from outside the Cape Town area, which is where this takes place, and over 1,000 of them are international visitors from over 40 different countries. Now, this sounds like a really, really great event and a lot of fun. It also includes a bike expo, which is really neat. And it's about a 110-kilometer ride. And apparently, it's supposed to be very, very scenic. So it sounds like a lot of fun. If any of you go out there and ride it, send me an email. Let me know how it went. Send me a photo. Send me an audio comment or even some audio from the event itself. Maybe you can talk to some of the other riders and we can learn a little bit here on the Fredcast about Freds in South Africa. I think that would be a lot of fun. Okay, and finally tonight, a couple of shout-outs. Just wanted to say hi to Robbie in Reynoldsburg, Ohio. Hi to Jim in Dayton, Ohio. And also hi to Elise. I want to thank all of you out there for helping to spread the word for the Fredcast. I'm watching our audience numbers go up and up and up. I'm really excited about that. It is my pleasure to do this for you, and I really appreciate you spreading the word. Also appreciate you voting for us on Podcast Alley. Go ahead to the show notes, and you can click there and do that. Please continue to tell your friends about the Fredcast. That's great. Frapper Map is getting more and more users. It's great to see where our listeners are all over the world, and that's really fun. And appreciate it if you continue to contact me with your comments, with your suggestions, with your product ideas, things that you'd like me to review. And you can do that either in text form or in audio form by sending me an email to thefredcast@gmail.com. You can call the Fredcast listener hotline at 206-203-FRED. And you can also put comments on the website at www.thefredcast.com. Lastly tonight, as always, PodSafe Cycling Music. This one comes to us, as it does every week, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. It's a band called the Cool Waters Band with a song called Hey, All Right. Links in the show notes to the PodShow site as well as to the Cool Waters Band website. Thanks once again for listening and for staying subscribed. Look for another Fredcast coming to you very soon. In the meantime, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
Now, 'cause there's roaches in my-